Welcome to Season 2 of The Voice Behind the Pen, hosted by author and screenwriter S.C. Dickens. Before we move into this new season, we'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, following, subscribing, rating, and sharing Season 1. Keep sending in your feedback as it helps us get better at delivering a quality show for you all to enjoy. A special thanks to all of the guests from Season 1, Freeze, Tony Hale III, Mark Six Mitchell, Empress Rolanda, William Young, Keith Lakeen Powell, Victor L. Martin, John Alexander, Brianna Cole, and Marcus Massey. Thank you all for coming on and sharing your expertise, mindset, and wisdom. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, send SC an email via the email link at www.theauthorscdickens.com. While you're on the site, be sure to check out SC's ghostwriting services and other works on the store page. If you'd like to advertise on the show, or you'd like production work for any of your projects, send me an email at faxtheproducer@gmail.com. That's fax with a Z. So, as usual, kick back, grab whatever your go-to is to let loose, and please enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Voice Behind the Pen podcast. I'm your host, author, and screenwriter, S.C. Dickens, and tonight, I will be diving into the journey and insights of a remarkable individual shaping the world through her creative endeavors. I'm thrilled to introduce our esteemed guest tonight, Yolanda Power, an extraordinary stage writer, producer, and director with a career spanning decades and a portfolio blasting with impactful productions. Yolanda is a true force in the entertainment industry. From her early days as a young enthusiast inspired by Annie to her groundbreaking performance alongside legends like Samuel Jackson. Yolanda's passion for storytelling has been unwavering, but Yolanda's journey does not stop there because her dedication to her craft led her to found Josonda Productions, a powerhouse in the world of stage plays, films, television shows, and commercials. As the creative mind behind acclaimed productions like Stuck and Big Boys Do Cry, Yolanda has a gift for weaving powerful themes and messages into her work. So without further ado, let's welcome Yolanda Powell. Good evening, Yolanda. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good evening. Good evening.
All right. All right. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I know you're a busy woman. You know, you're a producer, director, actress, stage play writer. Girl, you're doing the damn thing, so.
Yes, and a mom. A mom is the first one.
Oh, yeah, girls. Yeah. Well, so if you're a mom, so that means you're a doctor, a lawyer, a nurse.
I'm an everything mom. I started getting a t-shirt, dance mom, soccer mom. Then it's going to be like, I'm just an everything mom. Right?
Because, you know, that's how the moms wear them shirts, them jobs, boy.
Yes.
You got a bunch of them, you know.
So, absolutely. Well, you
know, on Mondays, I bring somebody that's an author, and on Wednesdays, I bring somebody in the film industry.
Okay.
And today, I'm bringing you on because you write screenplays. I mean, stage plays, excuse me.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's something I've been very interested in. And reading your bio, I was very impressed with all the things that you have done and that you are doing.
Okay, thank you.
All right. So what inspired you to pursue a career in acting? We're going to start with that one first.
Yes, what inspired me? So when I was about 8 years old, my mom took me to go see the original Annie. I believe it was the original Annie back in the 80s. She took me and my godbrother, and I just remember sitting in that movie theater and looking at the little girl playing Annie, and I was just mesmerized. Like, I was, like, captivated, and I was sitting there like, I could do that. And so I remember, you know, leaning over to my mom and saying, Mommy, I could do what she doing. And my mom, she just kind of just helped cultivate that gift. She put me in a performing arts school. So, you know, my middle school is a performing arts school. My high school is a performing arts school. So I studied acting. So that's kind of what inspired me to act.
Okay. So I know when you were doing the Performing Arts School, was that also when you got your piano lessons?
Absolutely. So this was funny. So when I was at a school called Betsy Ross, back in the, I think it was 88, that's when I think, I, or 1987 or 88, somewhere in there, when I was attending, I was in sixth grade. And I remember they had an announcement over the PA system at school saying, you know, about the casting call. So I was very interested. I went home, told my mom. Of course, she inquired, and she got me into the audition. And so I remember, well, I don't remember this. I remember the audition. I remember to this day walking up the steps, walking in the room. But my mom said that when I got into the audition, the part did require me to sing or something like that. I was auditioning for the role of Maritha. And the late August Wilson, who's in the audition, who wrote Piano Lessons, he asked me to sing, and I told him no. I was like, I'm not singing. And my mom said, I can't believe you told that man no, you weren't singing. But to this day, I am not a singer. And I remember one time my grandmother stuck me out in church one time a few years ago talking about, yeah, my granddaughter sing. I said, no, I don't sing. You know, like, I am not. I said, Grandma, I love you. I'll do anything you want. But I am not getting up to sing because I'm not a singer. So, but anyway, so I ended up getting that part as Maritha in Piano Lessons. And the rest is history with that. Like, you know, Samuel Jackson was in that play. This was before he blew up. Rocky Carroll, who's a dynamic actor. He played on Rock. Carl Gordon also played on the show Rock. It's a few people that really just made it in the industry. And, you know, I was grateful to be a part of that because I didn't even realize that my name was in the actual Piano Lessons book as an original cast member. Someone that had to read the play in college one day, many years ago when I went to church, they said, oh my God, do you know your name is in the book I was reading? And I was like, what are you talking about? And so, yes, it's in there as an original cast member. So, so that was a blessing.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. You know what? Out of the mouths of babes, you know?
Yes.
You
yes. Were- yes.
You wasn't having none of that.
No, I am not singing. I sing in the choir in the second row on the end, but that's all you're getting from me.
All right. Well, I'm a run down some other things that I've known you to have done. Can you share a memorable moment when you participated on the Amen Corner?
Oh yeah, the Amen Corner. So that was with the late Mary Alice. You know what? I just remember the cast, and that was also with the late Ronald Neal. And he played Superfly, for those that don't really know who he is, and he also played Whitley Gilbert's father on Different World.
World, yeah.
Yes, and so I remember I used to always hang out in his dressing room. I always hung out in his dressing room. That's how cool he was. And I would sit and I would talk with him. And that was kind of my one of my memorable moments. Also, Barbara Montgomery, who played on Amen, the show Amen with Sherman Hemsley, she played, I think, Cassietta on Amen. She was also in that play as well. And I remember she could talk too. And I used to sit in her dressing room. So between her dressing room and Ron O'Neill's dressing room, I would just go between the two and just have a ball with them. But I just love the fact that I had a chance to be a part of that. Yeah, so those are two of my memories, just hanging out with those two actors.
Okay. How about the documentary, Making a Joyful Noise?
Yeah, so I was approached to do that. From the producers of WTNH, which is in New Haven, Connecticut, where I was born and raised. And because the Amen Corner was like a church, you know, it's a play setting of a pastor, a female pastor, running her church. The producers knew that I went to church and I went to a Pentecostal church. So they came to my church one day and on a Sunday, and they kind of just followed me around the church, got some clips of me singing in the choir and interviewed me. That was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. So that's how that came about. And at the time, I was going to a church called Prayer Tabernacle, which is now called the Cathedral of the Holy Spirit. But that was a great experience. I love doing that.
Okay. Now I'm going to start talking about your transitioning. And I don't know if it really was a transition or was something you were going back and forth with the stage play and everything. What inspired you to fund the Josonda
Productions? Josonda Productions, yes.
Oh. And what is the significance behind the name, if you don't mind?
No, a lot of people don't know this. And then when I tell them, they're like, oh my God, I didn't know. So pretty much, the name of my company beforehand was called JC Productions, which was Jesus Christ Productions. But I was finding out there was a lot of JC everything, you know. So I said, you know, I need a more unique name. So I came up with the name Josonda. I'm sitting at work one day. I was working at a camp, and I'm sitting there writing names down on papers. And I was like, Josonda. And I wrote that. I was like, Josonda. That sounds weird, Josonda. But it really comes from the combination of Jesus and Yolanda. So you got the J-E-S and you have the O-N-D-A. So a lot of people, when they see that, they call me Josonda. And I'm like, you know, I ain't gonna correct them, you know what I mean? But then when they really asked me, they were like, your name's not Josonda, it's Yolanda. And I'm like, yes, but I wasn't gonna say anything. But so that's pretty much how Josonda came about. The reason why I started my production company is because, to be honest, I did a lot of auditioning in New York City when I was like in my late teens, early 20s. And because I had such a strong faith in my beliefs of Jesus Christ and being a born again Christian, I was just finding out that a lot of the roles that I was going for had a lot of profanity, nudity. I just didn't like the way they were portraying Black women for the roles that I was going for back then. You know what I mean? And so I think at one point, my pastor, who was been deceased for about 13 years, somewhere in there, he really, really believed and he saw something in me. His name was Bishop Moles. And he asked me to start writing skits and plays and things in the church. And I was like, I don't do this. I'm just an actress. At that time, I just had a dream of being an actress, being in front of the camera on stage. That's it. And so when he started asking me to put these things together and I saw how the response was from the congregation and they were loving it, then I kind of just filtered into, you know, writing and producing stuff outside of the church. And so that's pretty much how it started. It just started from my foundation of writing started from the church. And writing skits and things like that for the youth group and for Christmas programs. And then it turned into, you know, we need a longer play. We want you to write an hour play. And then it came a dinner theater. So it really started off in the church and then it just transitioned out into being Josonda Productions, my own company.
Okay. Can you share some highlights from the talent showcases you produced from your local artists in your early years of starting your production company?
Yes, I always love telling that story because I always reach back and because it inspires me. So I remember I had this vision, this push or pull to do talent showcases. And at the time I wasn't working. I was in between jobs. And I remember I only had a check for like maybe $52 that came in the mail from somewhere. I don't know. But I just kept feeling the gut of my stomach that I needed to do this talent showcase. So I had called up one of the theaters that I was associated with when I was in high school because I was considered an alumni. So I called him up and I was like, hey, you know, I want to do this showcase. How much would y'all charge me as an alumni? And the lady was like, well, we'll give you this rate, you know, which was a good rate. But you need to put down $50 in order, you know, for you to reserve it. And I said, thank you. I hung up that phone. I said, look, I ain't giving these people my last $52. So about two or three days went by. And I kept feeling like this tug to do it. So I called him back. I cashed a check and I went to go drop the $50 off. Mind you, I had $2. Like, I was like, what am I doing? But to make a very long story short, once I did that $50, every door started flying open. Like, I would tell people about the showcase and somebody would be like, oh, I can make your flyer. Oh, I could donate this. Oh, I can do that. You know, and by the time I finished that whole thing, I had walked away with $1,000 profit and a standing room only show. Like, you got to have that type of faith. And when you feel things in your spirit and in your gut, go after it. And so I always go back and I remember, you know, if God did it before, he can also do it again. And And some of the highlights, I loved it because to this day, a lot of the people that met, like I believe I had a band there, and then a solo singer, and the band and the soloist hooked up for many years. So it was beyond me. It was a networking thing for so many people, and it was a divine connection for other artists to get to know each other. So that's where all of the talent showcase, that's where that came from.
Okay. How did winning the Best Praise Dancer Award at the Hollaback Gospel Music Awards impact your career?
Oh, it impacted it pretty good because, you know, I was honored from my own hometown, which was really good, which is, you know, Hollaback is an organization that has been in effect for about, I think, maybe almost 20 years. They do, they honor people in the community and national recording artists every year. And so for me to be able to get that award it was an honor. It was an honor.
Okay. Being a female, would you consider stage playwriting a male-dominated thing?
You know what? I can't even say that because I'm so in tune to what I'm doing. I don't even look to see who's doing what. So if it's a male, if people consider it to be male dominating, I don't feel that at all. You know what I do my work, I put it out there. And if I, to answer your question, I don't feel that at all. So I don't feel that. So I feel like it's a divine calling on my life to do it. I do it. And if it's 10 males doing it and I'm the only female, oh well, like I'm still gonna do my thing.
Okay.
Yep.
Can you share with us the insights to the process of your writing, producing, and directing your stage play, Stuck?
Yes. So a lot of people say, I remember one person told me, I'm trying to get in your head with this script. How did you write that script? Stuck came from, it's definitely inspired by God. Like, Stuck came, I looked around. And you look around at our churches and our community and our people, African Americans, and a lot of times we dress the part, we can get our nails done, we can get our, you know what I mean, we wear the freshest clothes and this and that, you know, we got a smile on our face, we up and doing stuff throughout life, but we are stuck. A lot of times we're stuck and we don't even know it. And so when I started looking around at even people in my church and my community and in my family, you know, and seeing like different things that people are really stuck in. And then looking at my own life back then, I was like, man, people are really stuck. So that's really where it came from. Now, I always, because I just was talking to my cast about this the other day. And, you know, because sometimes I watch the play from like if I'm in the booth or something. And it's like, I take myself out of the equation. And I'm like, man, this play is really ministers to me. And it inspires you to not want to get stuck. So that's how I really live my life, but trying not to get stuck in situations. And so that's pretty much how I was inspired to write Stuck, was just looking around and seeing, like, you know, just things that people were stuck in and generational strongholds.
Okay. What about the process of Big Boys Don't Cry? That's pretty interesting title.
Well, it's titled Big Boys Do Cry. And so this is where that came from. Because I was married for 12 years, and then I had uncles, I had a father, brother, male associates and friends and stuff like that. And I remember one time I had asked a few of them, I was like, do men cry? Do y'all cry? Because y'all act like y'all so tough, like y'all, you know. And they were like, the majority of them were like, yeah, we cry. We cry, but we just don't cry in front of y'all. We don't cry in front of women. You know what I mean? And you know what I mean? And so I was like, well, how do y'all deal with stuff? He was like, we just deal with it on our own. Well, we're not going to cry in front of you. And so, you know, I remember one time one guy said to me, well, I work a lot so I don't have to be stressed out. Or I do this a lot so I don't have to think about stuff. And it inspired me to write that play because the main character that I write about in the play, he's holding on to so many things from his childhood that he had to man up, and he felt like he had to man up and he couldn't cry. He had to be strong and this and that. But then he came to a breaking point in his life where it was like he just he just was breaking down because he was holding on to so many things. And so the play is inspired. You see this young man that he's married, his wife is having a baby. He has a lot of pressure on him and he's just having a breakdown. He doesn't have a great relationship with his mother, estranged from his father. And so you just see this young man dealing with so many things. And so when I named it Big Boys Do Cry, I want women to know that our men do cry and we need to be a better support to them. And it's okay to cry in front of us. Like, let us help you if we could. But the moral of the release of the story is that there is a king in every man. And that's really what, and we have a great tribute at the end of the play where we crown the men in the play to be strong and to know that it's okay to cry and to get help. Yeah. There's a king in them. So that's pretty much what that play is about.
Yeah. I remember the first time my kids see me cry. They were in their early 20s. My youngest son, he might have been about 17, 18. And my daughter was like 22. And my other son was like 23. And I was involved in a motor vehicle accident. Mm-hmm. And I could tell that it threw them for a loop because they've never seen their father cry. Mm-hmm. And I realized that they did not know how to handle that because I looked at them, look at each other. And it was like, what is this? My sister, first time she seen me cry, she was in her 30s.
Mm, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I get it, you know, because we're taught chin up, chest out. No matter, you keep going, you know? And I had to realize that crying was dialysis for my soul. It helped me process a lot of things, you know? And it made me realize, like, hey, listen, the only way you're going to get through this is show your emotions, your human emotions.
Yes.
But we're so stuck as men of being vulnerable to the wrong person.
Yes.
And using it against us. You understand what I'm saying? So we always will keep our guard up.
Yes.
So I want to give you a shout out for doing that, you know, because a lot of women don't process that. They'd be like, well, you know, he a man, he'll get over it. And that's how we're taught. Even when we're dealing with a breakup, you understand what I'm saying? We have no support system. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
I
remember an older guy telling me this, and it is so true. Like, just take for instance, you got a 6-year-old boy or 8-year-old boy or 8-year-old girl. And they're riding a bike. If a girl falls off the bike, it's like, everybody's running over to her. Hey, you know, you okay? Yeah. You know, get up, you know. If a boy falls off the bike, same age.
Get up, be a man, get up there.
You know what I mean? From a child, a man is taught to be strong. You're not even taught to deal with your emotions.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? So when he told me that a few years ago, I was like, you know what? You are so right. It's just not fair. You know, to make a guy feel like they got to get up and keep going, but they're hurting.
Yeah.
You know, make sure they're not, you know, make sure they're okay, just like you would make sure that little girl is okay.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what the play is about.
Yeah.
And we also do a luncheon too. I did my first annual Big Boys Do Cry luncheon last year, and that was phenomenal. And so I did a tribute to the guys with a dance and a mime. And then I think really what set it off was the panel discussion. You know, the guys just opened up and they talked about so many different things. And that was very successful. So we're definitely going to do it again this year.
Yeah, that's good. That's and more men need to know that there is a support system, you know?
Yes.
You know, I'm helping with a project now that Pamela Coleman is doing. And it's called I'm Not Okay, and it's okay that I'm not okay, you know. And I'm tributing some of my trauma, my past hurt, my past mental illness, and I'm realizing how I had to build myself up, how I had to get myself out of certain situations, you know. And that shows that you're a thinker as far as outside of the box, because you can write the average everyday thing. But you took upon yourself to write something that could mean something, that could help somebody, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And a lot of people tell me that, and I didn't even realize this till a few years ago. They say, you write a lot of plays about mental and emotional health. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? You're right. Like, those are things that probably trauma that I dealt with in my life. Because a lot of times you write from your experience. You write from, like, even rappers or poets or, you know, singers. They write music and they do these, then they write these things because they're going through it. So when I really look back, I didn't have a lot of physical, you know, ailments. Thank God, physically, you know, I've been very healthy. But a lot of times I had matters of the heart and I had to deal with things in my mind. So I write in the subconsciously, you could be writing about stuff like that. Yeah. And so when someone brought that to my attention, they was like, you write about a lot of family or friendships, relationships, you know, being broken and mended, mental health things, emotional. And they said it's excellent topics, but I didn't realize that. But I write from a place from my heart and what's dear to me. And I want to see people get healed emotionally and mentally. I really do. Because, you know, if the enemy can get your mind, then he has you.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Yeah. So.
So with that in mind, how do you approach casting for your cast, your stage plays? With, how do you know that, okay, this character can portray this part or character can be do this? How do you, what is your process? How do you figure that one out?
Well, of course, I get a lot of people that inquire about projects. So first of all, I either submit a headshot or a resume, right? Or if we do open casting calls, but a lot of times I like to just have them submit their stuff first, because, you know, when you do an open casting call, you can get any and everybody out there. And I don't want to be sitting there all day filtering through people that may not even, you know, fit the role. So if they have a certain look and they have a resume, then I'm like, okay, you know, well, they don't always have to have a resume. Everybody, you know, some people are just starting off. So I'm kind of lenient when it comes to that, because I believe that God has, you know, really giving me an assignment to train and coach talent as well while we're in person. So if they come in, you know, I have them read a script, a part of the script, or what we call sides. And if I see that there's a connection and if they can take direction, that's one thing that casting directors and directors look for in an audition. They may want you to do it again to see if you can follow their directions. And a lot of times, if you can't follow a simple direction, if the director says, okay, I need you to slow down on this part and, you know, it, or do this or do that. Okay, let's try it again. And you can't follow that direction, then you're just not following direction. So you're not going to probably most likely get that part. But with me, I look for potential a lot of times. I look for talent that can be coachable, teachable, and like I said, following directions. You can tell when they walk through the door if they have a hunger for it. You know what I mean? I don't want to work with somebody that has money on their brain. You know, like, you get what I'm saying? You got to have some passion for what you're doing. Yeah. Because I worked with some great people that were great at what they did, but they had a nasty attitude or they were unprofessional. They would come whenever they wanted to. And I'm like, you know what? You're going to learn today. I will, you know. Next time they came to rehearsal, they was replaced. You know what I mean? Or yeah. I'll just kindly call them and say, your services are no longer needed. So, I definitely, definitely look for people that can definitely follow directions.
Okay. So what is a pet peeve of yours on stage?
On stage, okay. On stage with an actor, and they think that they can make up their own lines on purpose. That is the biggest pet peeve, and I have literally let people go. Especially if we have rehearsed something in rehearsal, and I gave you a certain direction, and we talked about it, and you feel you can go on stage and do what you want to do, I have literally asked people not to come back. You're not going to you can't just do what you want to do. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's one of my biggest pet peeves, is thinking that you can just make up whatever you want to make up. Now, sometimes you might, you know, go black, or you might get thrown off with something. You have to get yourself back on track. That's different. But I've seen actors literally just change up lines just because they felt like it was what they wanted to say. They didn't want to say what was in the script. And that's a big no-no. You don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay. I got another question for you.
Yep.
I know me and you were talking about one of the YouTube videos that I seen on commercial. And I'm only bringing this up because you said that that person is no longer here. But yes. I think that person should be celebrated. Can you tell us a little about that actor and what he meant to you?
Yes, Antonio Roberson, man. When I first moved to Charlotte in 2015, you know, I got myself acclimated for the first year or whatever. So then in 2016, I was ready to start doing productions here. So I knew another person that lived here from Connecticut that I went to church from. So I immediately reached out to them and I was like, listen, I need some actors. Who you know? Because he had invited me out to a play that he was actually being a musician for. So I reached out to him and I was like, who do you know? He said, I got about three or four actors that might be able to, you know, work with you. So I said, okay. So Antonio was one of them. And so I think he reached out to me and I called him in for an interview. I mean, for an audition. And I'm telling you, when we first met, it was like we just connected instantly. And so we laughed and we joked and he just was really good at that part. And he said, you know, I want this part, right? And I said, you know, you got the part. And that's how we just started our relationship. And so I loved him so much because he just was such an inspiration. Like he was that type of person that was so excited about this role that he got. Like he would be on social media every day, pushing the shows, making up videos for each cast member. You know what I mean? Going out, looking at costumes, going online, sending me stuff. How do you think about this? What do you think about that? He just brought, you know, and when you get somebody that's that excited about your work, it's like it uplifts you, you know, it encourages you. And so he played the role of James from the very beginning. And no matter what happened, he was like, I'm not giving my role up. I don't care. I don't care what nobody say. I ain't never giving my role up. He was a mess. And so I remember he was in Big Boys Do Cry. I had cast him in Big Boys Do Cry. We did that for the first time in 2019, right before the pandemic hit. And so I knew that it was a serious issue when he literally was like, I can't do the play. And I was like, you all right? And he was in and out the hospital a lot. And he was like, he said, I'll be all right. But he got well enough to come to the show because I had to replace him. And he came to the show and he enjoyed it. He said, man, I wish I could have did that part. I said, well, we'll have you back in no time. So the pandemic hit in 2020. We were supposed to do Stuck and Big Boys Do a Cry again, Easter weekend of 2020. About 3 weeks before that, that's when they shut everything down. We couldn't do it. And so I remember this is how I knew something was definitely Antonio was one person that would always count down his birthday from like 30 days. It was like 30 days to my birthday for, you know, 29 days. And I wasn't seeing that getting closer to his birthday. So I remember waking up on his birthday and I went on social media and I was like, wait a minute, I ain't see him post in like days. And then I remember maybe about 10 o'clock that morning, one of our other cast members called me. She was boohoo crying. And she was like, they just found Antonio. He passed away. And I just couldn't believe it. I was like, I was torn because he was so talented. He just has so much life in him and so talented. So he passed away. They found him on his birthday. So ever since then, you know, it was hard to kind of replace him. He took that role to a whole nother level. Like he owned it. But we do every show now in his honor. And so we did our first show since then, last December. So last December was the first time we actually did it without him. So Antonio was greatly missed.
Yeah. I wanted to bring that up because I know me and you spoke before the show and you brought him up and, I know the relationship that y'all cultivated. And, you know, I felt it was important that everybody realize, you know, how you were to him and that this is an opportunity for everybody to get to meet him, even though he's no longer with us, you know?
Yeah, he was a rider. When I tell you, when you got somebody that's a ride or die, you got somebody that's planted with you. He was that person. Like, He was that ride or die, you know. And if I was getting slack, or if I was, no, you, we gonna have to do this show again. No, we ain't taking no break. You know what I mean? Like, he was that person that kind of kept the fire under me as well. Like, he just did so much. Because he was so excited about this project stuck. And he was just like, I'm never going to leave you. I'm always, you stuck with me. That's what we always used to laugh about. You stuck with me. I said, I know I am. So, yeah, that's Antonio. So, my buddy.
Well, you know, he's no longer in pain, you know.
Yes.
He wants you to continue to doing what you're doing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know he would.
So what role do you think your production company plays in the Charlotte area arts scene?
I am still building and learning Charlotte. I come from a small town in New Haven, Connecticut. So when I moved to Charlotte, I knew no one. I literally knew only probably one person. Like I said, the guy that his name is Mitchell, that I reached out to. I didn't really know anybody. So to come down and to do my first show, I think we debuted our very first show of Stuck July 7th and 8th of 2017. We did two shows at the Duke Energy Theater. I think it's being renovated or closed down at this point, but we did two shows there. And I remember the guy, the contact that I was dealing with at Duke Energy, he had emailed me that Monday after the show. And he was like, oh, my goodness, you had such a great turnout. We never had somebody for the first time that did a show with us that had that great of a turnout. It was almost like sold out. We almost had two sold out shows. So that was very encouraging to come down to a new city and to have that type of support. But, you know, like I said, we're still building. I'm not in competition with anyone. I do my work. I write what I write and I put it out there. And I just hope that, you know, we can make a great mark in Charlotte. I think that we're doing that. You know, it takes time to build brick by brick. And so I'm not in a rush to do anything, but I love the city of Charlotte. I want to be a blessing, to the city of Charlotte with my gifts and my talents. And I want to actually bring a lot more productions to Charlotte and help people, you know, when they bring their shows to Charlotte, help them get situated here and kind of be a production manager, because the city of Charlotte is banging. It's growing. And so I believe that my company would make its mark here one day.
Yeah. Has it affected you that CIAA is no longer out there?
No, not really. Not really.
The reason why I ask is because so many people are in town, and that would be the best time to promote like your production company. So that's what I was saying. I meant it like, you know, the traffic, you know, the people that aren't normally there are there, so you can promote to them.
Well, to be very honest, I've never done anything during I don't think I've ever done anything here in February. I think CIAA was here in February. However, you know, I remember one time we did go to a networking event at during the CIAA to promote. But you have to understand also a lot of those people are from out of town. So it's kind of like, you know, a mute point to kind of really market with them, because a lot of them are just in town for that particular event. And if we're having an event a month later, they're not going to be here.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You want to hear something real surprising? You'd be surprised on how many people would travel. Because, and the reason why I say that is that guy, Jamarcus, I think his name is, that did the stage play New Jack City. There were several people that were leaving North Carolina to go to the play in Texas. And it was another place. And the people were posting it on Facebook, y'all got my tickets, I'm going to go. And I was like, yo, he's coming to North Carolina. Why are y'all traveling? But it also shows you that some people are willing to leave their area.
Oh, no, don't worry about that, because that's happened to Stuck. You know what I mean? I was just talking about the CIAA, but I've had people travel from Richmond, from Atlanta, Connecticut, I think one point Baltimore, Philadelphia, to come to Charlotte to see Stuck. And I remember when we did the show in Columbia, there were two or three ladies that came to that show, and they happened to catch me after the show. They was like, you know what? We've been hearing so much about this play in Charlotte. We researched to see where you were going to be next, and we drove from Charlotte to Columbia, South Carolina to see the play. So I definitely know people would travel to see it because they have.
Yeah. Okay. Are there any obstacles that you had to overcome, and how did you deal with them? What strategies did you use?
You know what? That's a good question. That's really a good question, because I would say my biggest hurdle that I had to climb was people. People having to really build tough skin in the industry. You know, I can only imagine, you know, when you, if, you know, you got somebody like a Beyonce or somebody that's really out there, and they got to really take on the whole world, just, you know, saying all kinds of things about them and things that are not true and this and that and the other. And I remember one time when I started doing Stuck, you know, I started seeing a lot of masks come off from people that were in my life for years. You know what I mean? And it hurt my feelings for years, because I was like, you my friend, you're my cousin, you're my, I've known you since I was 6 years old. Like, why are you, you know, it was just so many things that were just going on. And I had to really, really get over the opinions of people, the lies that I was hearing. God had to teach me, you can't chase every lie. You can't try to fight every battle. You know what I mean? And so I had to really learn that. And these things were coming from people that I knew, you know what I mean? So that was kind of my biggest challenge. And I remember one time my dad is into, he's into entertainment, but he's more into gospel, the gospel music industry. Mm-hmm. And so I remember my dad had opened up a music store. This was before, you know, the internet started popping with all kinds of, you know, downloading and stuff. So my dad had a music store. And I remember he told me one time, and I disagreed with him, and I was like, he said to me, Nikki, this is my family, my friends call me Nikki. The majority of your supporters are not going to be your family and friends. They're going to be strangers.
Strangers, yep.
And I was like, no, Dad, that's not true. My family, this was before I started Stuck. That's not true. My friends, they going, you know, this and that. When I tell you that my father was 1,000% right with that, let me tell you something. The people that helped me out the most, that gave me the keys to their building and didn't know me from Adam, were older Caucasian men that I didn't even know. You know what I mean? The people that actually called me up and said, we wanted to help you and sponsor you and this and that, were people that I did not know. The people that could have helped me, the people that I know that had the funds or the resources, it didn't even have to have funds sometimes, but the resources or the means to help, they would sit back and watch. You get what I'm saying? So a lot of the people that really, really, really supported what I was doing and still to this day were strangers, people that I didn't even know, people that had been the most devoted. I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying none of my family or anything didn't support or some of my friends. I'm just saying the majority, when I have to look back and see the majority of my support system, my real support system, outside of my mother, you know, my kids and stuff like that, because my mom is, of course, my number one supporter from day one. You know, even with cast members and things, it's the people that I don't know. Like, I knew talented people back home, you know what I mean, that I wanted to cast. But I'm like, yo, you treating my stuff like it's like, you know, don't do that. And so that was one of the biggest obstacles. It wasn't even really money. It was getting over people and their opinions and the way they kind of just, like, you know, can turn on you.
Yeah. With that being said, was there any times that you just wanted to give up because of the suppression that you were getting?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I wanted to give up a few times. You know, for various reasons, not always because of people. It could be sometimes, you know, you feel like you're just spinning your wheels. I remember Tyler Perry said this one time, you know, you put all this money behind it and you do a good job and then only 12 people come. You know, I went through that too, you know, and it was devastating. It's very devastating. That's a blow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know, I'm not doing this no more. You know, nobody don't want to see it. Obviously, nobody don't want to see it, this and that. So I went through that. But what keeps me going is really like this fire that keeps like burning on the, on, you know, on the inside. And every time, it was funny because every time I would get a job and say, you know, I'm just going to get me a job later for this, something will always happen. And I'm like, why did people let me go? Like, I ain't do nothing. You know, I'm doing a good job. You know, it just didn't work out. So I'm to a place in my life where it's like, you know what? I know what my calling is, you know, and I'm going to keep doing it. And I can't keep looking at numbers all the time. You can't get caught up in that. And I remember one time I was watching Ice Cube. And I didn't even really watch the Wendy Williams show like that. My mom was a Wendy Williams show person. I wasn't. And so I went over to her house and she happened to have Wendy Williams on. And so I sat down, and, you know, I was listening to Ice Cube. And he said something that was so profound that stuck with me. She must have asked him, like, do you get nervous or do you, you know, wonder when you put out music, who's going to buy it and who's not? And his answer was, I don't worry about any of that. I put my work out and whoever comes, comes, and whoever doesn't want it doesn't get, you know what I mean? And I was like, yo, that's so like true. Like I had to start getting into that mindset. You know what? I'm doing a body of work. I'm going to put it out there. Whoever wants to see it is going to come see it. You get what I'm saying? We can't get caught up on numbers because at the backside of that, God always makes a way for me to be able to pay for everything, whether 10 people come or 1,000 people come. He always sends the money. He sends the sponsors to say, okay, I'm going to pay for the venue and this and that. But if 10 people come, everything's already paid for. You understand what I'm saying? So those are the things that I have to look at and be like, you know what? God is with me. Whether, like I said, whether 50 people come and I have a 600 seater and only 100 people come, if those 100 people go out and talk about it and are blessed, then I did my job. I can't help, you know, how many people come out anymore. You understand what I'm saying? So. Yeah. Yeah, so that's how I have to look at it now.
Yeah, it's hard to sometimes though. It's hard.
It is. You don't get me wrong. It is hard.
Still got a light bill, a gas bill, water bill, food. And everything is going up except for the price of what you get paid.
Yeah, tell me about it. Yes.
Everything is going up except for people's wages. So that's a lot of faith. And I commend you for taking that step into saying, you know what, let me do this anyway, you know, because that could be very discouraging, especially with somebody that don't know what to expect.
Yes, it is discouraging. It can get discouraging, but that's where you got to get the mindset in. You got to have a clear, you have to, it's a mind thing. And I can't get into, you know, but there's been times when I've had slow ticket sales, I'm like, you know what, bump it. And, you know, whatever, whoever, we only got 50 people coming. And then I look up and then 3 days before, the tickets are going through the roof. And then you look at the door and then you got a crowd waiting to come in. You get what I'm saying? It's never over until when that show starts. That's it. You know what I mean? It's never over until that. So I would encourage anybody, just believe in what you're doing. Do the work that you can, you know, the best that you can. Build a small team if you can to help you. And you do everything that you can in your power. And you ask God to do the rest. That's all I can do when it comes to that.
Okay. Good advice. Great advice. So now I'm going to go into your TV pilot. More Than Enough.
Okay.
Can you share a little details behind that? That's an upcoming project of yours, right?
Absolutely. So More Than Enough is a spinoff of the character in Stuck, the role of Stuck called Pastor Moore. Pastor Moore in Stuck is a single woman that has her own church. And she's a pastor, of course. And so I wanted to do a spinoff to salute a lot of the women pastors that we have out there, because a lot of times they get a lot of flack because people don't believe that there should be a woman pastor, just like they don't believe there should be a woman president. You get what I'm saying? So it's more of like a sitcom. It's more of a comedy, but it definitely hits on some really, really tough issues that we deal with in the church, you know what I mean? And it also, I love it because I wrote Pastor Moore. She's a very down-to-earth pastor. And so, yeah, so we're going to, we actually did do a pilot episode of it, but we're going to do it over because we had some kind of like, you know, some technical difficulties with it. So I'm not going to put anything out that I'm not comfortable with, but we're definitely going to get back to that. Hopefully in the next like year or so, we'll be able to go ahead and get those pilots together. Cause I think that's going to be a really good show.
Okay. Well, all your projects that you have going on, how do you prioritize them and decide which ones to pursue?
You know, that's a really good question, because that's hard. That's like saying you got like five babies and which one do you take care of, you know? And so they are my babies. But right now, I think that is a good question, because why do I pursue stuff more than so my other projects? I think that I'm so accustomed now to doing stage plays. But I also know that the momentum that I've gotten with Stuck, the feedback that I've gotten with Stuck. But I also am in the process of, you know, putting Stuck out there, but also weaning my way to doing, getting my Church Girls project, which I did last year. Was it last year? The year before last, I believe. Church Girls is about two young girls that grew up in church, but they have a secret life of crime. And so it's kind of like a suspense show, more like a power, you know what I mean? But it's more, if it makes sense, it's more of like it is a faith-based show, but I want it to be very entertaining, and very suspenseful. So that's something that I really, really want to work on. And when I did my short film, I had so many people call me and be like, oh my God, what are you doing with this? Who, you know, cause I left a cliffhanger at the end. It was like, oh my God, who gets shot? Who gets shot at the end? I'm like, I'm not telling you, you gotta wait. You know? And so, so I don't know what you want to prioritize, but right now Stuck is what I'm doing now. And, but I have my other babies that I'm going to be grooming in a minute.
Okay. So with that, I got the next question is, how do you approach the marketing and promotion for your productions?
Well, I always tell people that when it comes to marketing, I'm like a basic marketer. I know that's not one of my very, very strong points. I mean, I can do marketing materials. But marketing, you know, of course we do the traditional radio ads you do, but I'm more of that old school marketer. I like to do, I don't like to do it personally, but people that are more apt to hand out flyers and talk to people, be more personable, that we call it like street marketing, you know, going into restaurants or stores, putting in flyers, talking to people. Of course we do social media ads. Facebook Live with our cast members, that always intrigues people to get involved. Sometimes we'll do a talk back and answer questions about the play or about roles or something like that. And that's really it. That's really it.
Okay. Now, I know we joked about it at the beginning of the show, but how do you maintain a healthy work balance with so much you have that demanding of you? You know, you have the kids, you have the plays, you understand what I'm saying? How do you balance that out?
It's time management. I can't burn myself out with everything, doing one thing at a time. But I have to make sure that, you know, of course, my children are my priority. So, you know, once I get them off to school, I'm blessed in the season right now to be able to do this full time. And to still be able to pay my bills and things of that nature. So I drop my kids off. I come home. I got to have my tea. You know what I mean? And I just put myself on a schedule to say, okay, my day is going to start from 9:30 to 2. You know, this is where I'm going to work. And I got to go pick my kids up. And then, you know, if I can work later on that night, I will do, you know, throw in some things. But I just want to make sure that, first of all, that I'm taking care of myself. Because a lot of times we get so caught up in doing everything, and then we're not taking care of ourselves. And I was like that before, you know, then I end up sick or in the corner somewhere and exhausted, or, you know, you losing weight because you ain't eating, you know, it can happen,
yeah.
You know, because you're running so much, you're not even eating properly. So I make sure that I get up and I have myself some breakfast, even if it's a bagel in my tea. I got to make sure I put something in my system before I work out. Of course, I pray and I try to get my motivation up, you know, for the day and asking God, what do you want me to do today? Because sometimes I might have a whole agenda for my day, but God might say, okay, you know, no, I need you to, you know, do this or do that. So I try to just, pray and ask God for direction. But you do have to balance. You have to balance your life. And I was one of those people that would get up early in the morning, start production and do it all the way all night. And I had no balance. You get what I'm saying? And so you got to learn how to have balance when you do this.
How do you see the future of theater evolving?
It's been told that theater is becoming more popular because people want to, first of all, get out of the house. They want to see live productions. They have a lot of fake stuff going on. We just talked about fake stuff, you know, earlier. A lot of stuff, you know. You got the AI out there now. You got this. You got so many fake stuff going on social media. People just want to just go out and see live entertainment. So, to be very honest, I think that theater is going to be thriving in the next few years.
Okay. What legacy do you want your company to leave?
The legacy that I want my company to leave is I want from a few standpoints, I want the work that whether I write it, whether somebody else writes it, but whatever work comes through my company, whether, you know, we're hired to produce, we're hired to write, whatever, I want every message that we put out to be life changing for someone. Thought-provoking, and I want lives to be, you know, I want lives to be changed for the better. I want reconciliation with families. I want healing and people to walk around being whole and their self-esteem higher when they leave one of the Jasonda productions, like I said, whether I write it or not, because I get people all the time that, can you read my script? Can you help me produce? Can you help me direct? You know what I mean? And so I'm in a place where God is like, okay, you asked to do this full time, you asked for certain things, you know, get ready for it. So whoever sees the Jasonda Productions, I want them to be inspired. But also on the other end, I want to be able to help other people's dreams come true. You know, whether it be a producer, whether it be a performer or a writer. You know, I want to be able for them to be a home and a place where people to come and be well compensated, but pursue their dreams. And sometimes, you know, somebody might walk in the door and not even know what they really want to do. And they just kind of stumble on something and they're like, you know what, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So I want dreams to come true also through Jasonda Productions by helping other people.
Okay. Can you share some tips for inspiring actors and performers?
Can you repeat that?
Can you share some tips? Give some good advice. What advice would you give them?
For performers, I would say, so many things I could say. But for a performer, anybody that's dreaming to do something, stay focused, because we can become so distracted. And I'm guilty of that as well. We can become so distracted sometimes when we don't even know we're distracted. Stay focused on your dreams. You know, everybody's not going to see what you see. And you got to be careful telling everybody what you want to do, because everybody is not seeing your dreams and your visions. And sometimes you can have dream killers. And a lot of times they don't mean to be that way. They just can't see it. So if you believe in what you're doing, you see where you're going, you keep going, you know, try to get people, you know, sometimes I'm a lone ranger. Like I can't bring everybody with me. You know what I mean? Because I got to stay focused on where I'm going. Now, if I attract those people that see where I'm going, you get what I'm saying? They get behind me and they push, even if it's just that one person that you got. Then that one person sticks with you and you're going to get another person. You got to be careful who you bring in your circle. You can't bring everybody in your circle. You get what I'm saying? You got to go into things with your eyes wide open. You know what I mean? And you want to trust people, but you got to be, you know, very aware of what's around you, because I'm going to be real. It's snakes around you. You know what I mean? And people that have different motives of why they want to be around you. And you got to be very careful. And that's why I try to stay prayerful, to ask God to open my eyes to people that are trying to deceive me, or trying to, you know, be my friend, or trying to be a, you know, close, and they really trying to destroy. They really trying to be nosy. They really, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you got to be very, very mindful of that stuff. And then this is one thing that I had to learn. You got to learn how to delegate and learn how to trust people with things, because you can't do everything. Now, in my company, I can do most of what needs to be done. I can edit. I can do my own flyers. I can do most of the stuff. But if I'm doing everything under the sun, I'm not going to really get nowhere. You get what I'm saying? So I had to learn how to delegate work and trust people. And it's funny, because I would delegate and I still be looking over their shoulder.
Yeah.
Girl, if you don't get over my, this is how they even talking. Girl, if you don't let me do this, would you stop? I got this. And I'm like, okay. You know, I just wanted to be right. You know what I mean? So I would say to any dreamer, the first thing I would say is stay focused.
All right. Well, in closing, can you give everybody contact information, social media, how they can apply for a position on one of your sets, or just part of your team, any way, shape, or form?
Absolutely. So, of course, my main thing is my website, which is jesondaproductions.com, J-E-S-O-N-D-A, productions with an S.com. It's under a little bit of construction because we are revamping, but it's still kind of up and live. We do also have a newsletter that is very inspiring. We put it out once a month. And that gives, I always tell people when they inbox me or email me, how can I learn thing about your company? How can I stay in touch? I always tell them to subscribe to the website, because we're always, you know, we have casting calls or plays or even, you know, special workshops or anything for just our subscribers or discounts. You will be able to know all of that through our newsletter that we put out. So that's the first thing. You can find me at Yolanda Powell on IG and on Facebook. My name is spelled Y-L-O-N-D-A. We also have Jesonda Productions on both Facebook and Instagram. And, yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. But I would say, if you really, really want to keep in touch, definitely sign up for our newsletter.
Okay. Well, Yolanda, I thank you so much. I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on the show and taking the time out. Also, don't you have a production coming up soon?
Oh, yes. In Kannapolis.
Yeah, to promote that.
Yeah. In Kannapolis, North Carolina. We're going to be at the Kannapolis Middle School, a beautiful venue in Kannapolis. This is our first time bringing stuff to Kannapolis, North Carolina, so we're really excited. It's going to be for one show only on Saturday, April 13th at 3 o'clock p.m. Yes, I put in the afternoon, because I always hear people, I can't see at night. So I say, you know what? I'll make it easy for everybody. I'm going to do an afternoon show. So tickets are now on sale. We are actually running a resurrection a weekend special, buy two, get one free. So it started today. It will end Sunday night. But if you can't make it to the show, we take donations, but we would love to have your face in a place.
All right. Well, I thank you again, young lady.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much. I appreciate everything. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is another episode of Voice Behind the Pen podcast. I'm your host, author, and screenwriter, Essie Dickens. Good night.